Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Andy, Don, and Dude.
Whew. Man, I just flew in from Cleveland and boy, are my arms tired.
Nice.
This is the Album Nerds Podcast. I'm Dude. I got Andy and Don with me. Andy, you ready to talk about some hearty har funny albums?
Yeah, you know I am, man. Hopefully by the end of this episode, I get some respect, you know? Hey, yeah.
What's the deal with music podcasts? Is it radio? Is it? I don't.
Boy.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Who are the ad wizards who came up with that campaign?
There you go. Yeah, that's why we leave the comedy up to the experts.
Yeah, professionals only on this episode.
So this is, of course, the Album Nerds Podcast. We love music. We love albums. We love the album format. We got a great show for you this week. We're going to be discussing three music albums that have comedic or funny overtones. Don's going to ask us a deep question. We're going to have some shout-outs to some albums or album-related items that we're digging. And then, of course, we'll spin that wheel of musical discovery to find out what we'll talk about next time. But this time, it's all about the funny.
That's what I'm talking about!
Funny music albums have been delighting listeners for decades, blending comedic lyrics with catchy tunes to create memorable and entertaining experiences. From parody songs to originals, these albums showcase the diverse ways artists can use music as a vehicle for humor and satire. Today, each of us will present funny albums.
Yeah, funny music albums not only delight listeners, but also frustrate them, depending on how funny they think it is or isn't.
Yes, funny is very subjective.
Yes, and that's where the challenge here was, you know, like, what are the artists leaning on? What is there a good musical foundation beneath the funny? Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty important. So how'd you guys do? What other albums did you consider while taking this hilarious journey?
Well, this is not something I usually listen to. I mean, I like stand-up, but I don't usually listen to albums kind of in this format. So I was a little bit lost. I started with Reggie Watts, with kind of has like a stand-up sort of vibe to his performance. He's just like a beatbox, kind of fun. King Missile from the 90s, kind of like poetic, kind of dark comedy. A rock group called Psycho Stick, another rock group called The Axis of Awesome. I think a little more modern groups there. Yeah, but King Missile was really the one I enjoyed the most. I think their record from 1990, They, was one I almost went with. It's really dark and twisted, but it is funny in kind of a weird sort of way.
That's the one with Detachable Penis?
Yeah, Detachable Penis. That was their big hit. I heard that on the radio a little bit. Similar goofy songs on that record.
Other detachable things? Or
yeah, different body parts.
Just every song was detachable toe, whatever.
What'd you find on your listening excursions, Don?
Well, I was thinking about some albums that are kind of more sort of in that gray area, somewhere between serious and silly.
Right.
You know, so I thought about They Might Be Giants, their album Flood. I remember I was in like junior high at the time and, you know, I enjoyed songs like Particle Man and their cover of Istanbul, Not Constantinople.
Yeah, I only really remember that because my little sister used to watch that Tiny Toons Adventures show, and they did kind of like music videos for those songs. It was I didn't realize it was a real band at the time.
Yeah, They Might Be Giants is John Flansburgh and John Linnelli. They're actually pretty talented. You know, I mean, it's just two guys, and I mean, they're obviously, you know, very, you know, good musicians, and I mean, their music can be sort of complex, but it's also a little bit goofy. What about you, Dude?
I also considered bands like Presidents of the United States of America that were funny but not comedic, you know, and it wasn't really parody exactly. It was just silly. One I really would have liked to have talked about that we already talked about on the show a couple of years back, and this is parody, was Hot Country Nights. The album was The K Is Silent. Dierks Bentley, well-known huge country star, had an alter ego band where they did they all had mullet wigs and did a 90s country tribute. It had songs like Moose Knuckle Shuffle, Wrangler Danger, and You Make It Hard. Well, Asphalt takes dad jokes to the next level with lots of puns.
Yes, it was that Asphalt, if I recall.
Yeah. So it's about hitting the road, but it's also about that ass. You know, that's kind of, I think, the lane we ended up in for the most part. So why don't we get into our choices?
You choose me?
All right, well, for my funny album selection, we're talking about A Flight of the Conchords and their self-titled debut full-length from 2008, Flight of the Conchords. So the Conchords are made up of multi-instrumentalists Brent McKenzie and Jermaine Clement.
What are their rap names?
The Rhinoceros and the Hip Hop Apotamus.
Nice, Don. Impressed. I knew they were large mammals, but I wasn't 100% sure there. So they are from Wellington, New Zealand. Are you guys familiar with the kind of like comedic stylings of New Zealand? Yes. Kind of have a very dry sense of humor, yeah. I guess I would say. Self-deprecating kind of style.
Yeah. Well, they're in a unique position in the world, like geographically, which I think would create a very different type of awareness of your own culture.
Yeah, it's a recurring joke on the show that they're sort of like little brother to Australia. Right. And people always mistake them for Australian.
Yes, yeah. I make that mistake a lot.
All right, so the album Flight of the Conchords, the songs are pulled from the HBO TV series Flight of the Conchords, which is loosely based on the BBC radio program from 2005, Flight of the Conchords. So these guys have been kind of working on this material for quite a while. Why don't we jump in here and play, this was in the pilot episode of the HBO series. This is called The Most Beautiful Girl in the Room.
The most beautiful girl in the
this kind of funny thing in the TV series where like the scene will be going along normally and everything will just kind of stop and they'll do like the music video kind of like around the actors in the scene, which I think works pretty well, especially in this case. So everybody's kind of like frozen and they're just like singing around them, and they're not bad musicians. They have kind of a nice falsetto, and I think what impressed me about this album was they explore a lot of different genres, which I was not common in these style albums.
It seems like the parody is more of the genres and the tropes within those genres than they're actual, not parodying other songs. It's the styles that they're parodying.
Mm-hmm.
And they do it well. They do it effectively, which is, I think, what makes this actually work when I assumed it was going to suck. So,
yeah, I think it works pretty well. My clickbait headline for Flight of the Conchords is, no matter the country, medium, or genre, Brett and Jermaine can take a dumb situation, give it a beat, and make you laugh. These guys are pretty good about pulling comedy out of like pretty mundane situations or pretty not seemingly very funny situations. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. I know that it's very dry humor, but I think it's just kind of like they're very overly honest about themselves and they kind of overshare in every situation. Mm-hmm. And it just leads to some funny circumstances. And I think largely the music helps tell the stories in the show and on the album here. And I think that's by far what they're best at.
I think what is interesting, though, is that even without the context of the show, which I had seen bits and pieces of over the years, the album itself is still enjoyable. You don't need the storyline for the songs to be funny, and you may not know what the storyline was, but it doesn't really matter. They're still good.
Yeah, the story does not seem very important at all. Listen to the album. Yeah, so they go through different genres such as folk, pop, funk, and hip hop. Why don't we play a cut here next? Inner City Pressure.
On the counter of the 7-Eleven from a quarter past six till a quarter to seven.
Well, Inner City Pressure appears in the second episode of the series called Brett Gives Up the Dream. And it's just about them kind of, you know, looking for a job and trying to make ends meet. And so the song is about the challenges of urban living, particularly for struggling artists. It's quite clearly a kind of a parody of West End Girls by the Pet Shop Boys. You know, it's not a direct parody, as in like it's not taking the song and changing the lyrics, but it's so clearly, a Pet Shop Boys take. So my clickbait headline for Flight of the Conchords is Clever Kiwi Comedians Take the Cringe Out of Funny Music.
That's good.
Yeah, I worry about these kinds of things. Like, I'm generally not drawn to parody music. I mean, I was when I was a child.
Sure.
But the, you know, the songs are, I mean, they're well written, but they're, I mean, they're funny. You know, they're not like I'm dying laughing funny, but they're clever. And I don't know how to explain it.
They're silly. I mean, it's silly things that they say at times. But what makes it funny, I think, is the context of the genre or the music they're representing. You're expecting it to be serious, and then they throw in these silly little references to things, and it throws you off. It's like a little surprise. So it's like, did I hear what I think I just heard?
Yeah, that's true. And, as Andy mentioned, I kind of like the self-deprecating approach of most of their songs. I think this works better in the context of a show, you know, where you have like a story going on and there's just like a couple of songs that you hear. You know, as far as like an album goes, you know, I'm not going to listen to it more than a couple of times. You know, it's a novelty, as they say.
It's a novelty for sure. But I think, in the right context, maybe like in a mixtape or like on like a road trip, maybe this would be fun to sing along to if you really were a big fan. Okay, let's hear another track from the record. This is track 4. It's called Think About It.
With knives and forks sticking out of his leg, and he said,
ah, ah, get the knives and forks. Like, what's up?
The song satirizes the sincere protest songs, like What's Going On by Marvin Gaye, which is what this reminded me of the most. In the context of the episode, the one dude has his collar up, and it's very much like the cover of What's Going On, and they're walking through the city. So it contrasts real social issues with absurd scenarios. There's crime and violence, but instead of a knife, it's a knife and a fork that's stabbing someone, and then there's a diseased monkey.
Just some goofy guys.
Yes. Again, the parody of the style was effective. Like the tone of it is like, okay, I know what they're doing here. My clickbait headline to describe Flight of the Conchords: weird and inexplicably catchy. Flight of the Conchords proved that comedy and music can coexist. Not to get too far ahead of myself here, but this ain't Weird Al, right? It's not sophomoric completely. It is, but it isn't.
Yes.
It's the thinking man's sophomoric.
as much as this can be.
Yeah. And they don't go the filthy route.
No.
They use like nice sounding versions of dirty words. I think that's refreshing. And this was on HBO. They could have said whatever they wanted to. I think that adds to the humor. It softens the edge of the parody when you don't go the easy route and use dirty words and stuff.
Unlike Tenacious D.
Exactly. The anti-Tenacious D. The humor is nuanced. You kind of have to listen to catch it. Yeah, this was funny, and funny by itself, and then funny in the context. I watched an episode of the show to get a sense of it, and it was the one that featured this song. Yeah, I don't think you need the show, but it helps.
It helps, yeah.
A demonstration of how good they are at their instruments and, you know, what kind of musicians they are. There is a live special on HBO. I think it's called Live in London from like 2018, but it's a good watch. It's only like an hour and a half.
That adds a lot. The musicianship and the actual involvement in the composition matters for this type of discussion. When we're looking for good, funny albums, I think them being true musicians and not just a stand-up comedian doing a song about poop,
it helps a lot, and you have to listen to the record multiple times.
Yes, it does.
For sure. So if you're not familiar with the record or Flight of the Conchords, I think it's definitely worth a listen. They explore things. There's like pop songs, kind of like Pitbull style things. There's like Indian style songs with like more like traditional Indian sounds. There's a really funny song at the end of the record called Bowie, which has like different versions of David Bowie talking to himself. It's hysterical. Flight of the Conchords, whether you check out the TV show or the album or even the radio program, I think they're all pretty funny and worth your time.
Before we continue on with our journey of raffling, why don't we hear a little bit from friend of the show, Pick a Disc.
Do you like music? Do you like podcasts? Chances are you like music podcasts. Take this one, for example, Pick a Disc, where every fortnight a guest comes on to talk about an album for whatever reason they want to. Sometimes I like it, sometimes perhaps even something else other than just like it. You just listen to the podcast and find out. We talk about the album, we talk about the songs, we talk about the artists, we talk about tangent things that are slightly related, and sometimes we deviate off tangents. But don't worry, we'll always bring it back in the end. But you can find us on all your social medias and all the podcast apps apps for searching for Pick a Disc. You can also find us on the part of the WeDig Podcast Network under Linktree/WeDig Podcasts. And until then, happy listening to all those discs that you are picking. Goodbye.
He's actually on a roll lately because, you know, of course, I, you know, guest starred in an episode where we talked about Depeche Mode Violator. He recently did The Cure, Songs of a Lost World. And the latest one has The Dusk.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Don Takeover there, it sounds like.
Donnie Likey. All right. So my pick for a funny album comes from Weird Al Yankovic from February of 1984. It's called Weird Al Yankovic in 3D. It's the second studio album by Weird Al Yankovic, born Alfred Matthew Yankovic in Downey, California in 1959. The album's built around parodies and pastiches.
That word pastiche. You're trying to make this sound like more fancy than it is. Yeah. It's a bunch of songs about baloney and stuff.
Yeah. So yeah, they're parodies of pop music of the mid-1980s. Half of the songs are like direct parodies, right, where he's basically just changing lyrics of songs, and the others are style parodies, kind of more similar to what we just talked about with Flight of the Conchords. Here is the big one, Eat It.
Kids are starving in Japan, so eat it.
That was weak. Japan, not where people say kids are starving.
Usually
that's
true.
I guess that's what rhymed.
Yeah, there isn't a cereal that rhymes with Ethiopia. Eat It is obviously a parody of Michael Jackson's 1983 single Beat It. And, you know, the lyrics are changed to be about a parent attempting to get a picky child to eat anything at all.
Grown.
Yeah. But, it's pretty clever. You know, I'm listening through to these songs, I'm like, oh, that's, you know, that's kind of funny. You know, it goes in places you don't expect. Apparently, Michael Jackson thought it was funny and agreed to allow the parody.
I heard a critic who said this was the beginning of the downfall of Michael Jackson after.
Yeah, that could be.
The song was parodied.
At the time, I was a little kid, but I was a huge Michael Jackson fan, and I took offense to this.
Personal offense.
Yeah. I was like, who would want to listen to this instead of the real song?
Yeah. The video was quite funny, you know, because he was wearing the Michael Jackson glove.
Yeah.
And, so and instead of fighting with switchblades and stuff, they're doing knives and forks and stuff. Of course, in Beat It, the guitar solo is done by Eddie Van Halen. In this case, it's actually done by Rick Derringer, who you might know from like Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo and that Hulk Hogan Real American song. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he produced the album and several of Weird Al's albums. Anyway, my clickbait headline for Weird Al Yankovic in 3D is Yankovic cements legacy as the parody artist. Mm. I think Weird Al is sort of synonymous with this kind of with parody songs,
yeah.
You know? And you know, I think this is really when he hit.
Well, he kind of took it over from the old school 60s and 70s parody stuff, were more vaudevillian in a way, and he reestablished it as a viable way to make money in the music industry.
Yeah, this one's a little different from his first album, which featured a lot of accordion, basically accordion, you know, going along with every track. On this one, the backing music is pretty true to the original records. So yeah, let's hear some more. This is Polkas on 45.
You're my woman, got my mojo rising, Mr. Mojo.
Yeah, so that includes a series of classic rock songs rewritten as polka tunes. There's like 20 of them or something in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in like 3 or 4 minutes, right?
I mean, yeah. Yes, felt longer, but yes, 3 or 4 minutes. So yeah, the juxtaposition of the original songs with the polka music was taken very seriously by Lawrence Welk and other artists, but like LA Woman and Hey Jude are stripped of their coolness.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Hey, Joe. I was like, gonna shoot my old lady.
Yeah. So the medley also includes traditional polka songs like Beer Barrel Polka and Clarinet Polka, which pretty much it seems like the trick is put polka at the end of any words and that's a polka song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So my clickbait headline to describe in 3D, the album that divides people. Either you're laughing or wondering how this ever got released. there's little middle ground for Weird Al. People either like, ugh, so stupid, or they love it. I'm kind of in that so stupid camp. However, I'm not totally immune. I mean, I liked the movie UHF that he made. I enjoyed the album Even Worse in 1987. Of course, I was reading Mad Magazine at that period of my life. So a buddy loaned loaned the album to me, and I listened to it a bunch of times for a couple of weeks, and then I got bored with it. But so I had my dalliance. He seems like a cool guy. I respect what he does. I just don't really like listening to it.
You're right. The humor is very Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
I just don't like Weird Al like I used to, okay?
Ouch!
That's it. I mean, I like a song here or there is fun to hear, but a whole album is no bueno. All
right, well, let's hear the closing cut on the record. This is the epic Nature Trail to Hell.
If you like the 6 o'clock news, then you'll love Nature Trail to Hell. Nature Trail to Hell.
This is one of three originals from In 3D, about a fictional horror movie. I'd be lying if I wasn't humming that to myself over the last few days. It is pretty catchy, as idiotic as it is. It's got this great kind of hidden moment in it where there's a backwards passage that says, Satan eats cheese whiz about two-thirds of the way through the record. I mean, stuff like that as like a 12, 13-year-old boy would just be like comedy gold. I mean, that's like all you could ask for. As a 40-year-old, maybe not quite as appealing. A clickbait headline for In 3D is, one thing is for sure, no matter the number of dimensions, Al always brings the weird. I haven't heard a lot of his discography, but I would say the wrong records I've heard, this is fairly listenable. I think it's a big step forward from his debut, which I think is maybe not very listenable, at least for me. This is much more tight, inventive, pretty fun. I mean, I think the least enjoyable part for me is his vocal. It's so nasally and just strained. And that part gets hard for me to listen to for 45 minutes straight. The lyrics, though, are funny, and it's all done with, you know, a good sense of humor. I like his personality. I think he's just kind of a funny guy. I wish there was more meat to the satire. Like, there's not beyond the bass, like, joke, and we're not talking about what this original song is about. There's nothing really going on in terms of, like, developing a theme or an idea during the course of the verses.
The compositions, either they're close, you know, as close as they can get to direct copies of what they're parodying, or then the originals, the compositions are not musical enough for me. It doesn't sound like much care was put into the music. It's more about talking about spaghetti or whatever.
Yeah, it kind of feels like a wedding band kind of level of quality. Like, it's not bad by any means, but it's fairly paint by numbers, I guess. I keep going back to, like, who is this made for? Like, who's buying these records? Is it like
me back when I was seven? You know,
but he has a fan base of adults that grew up on him that still love it and love the. I guess the live shows are quite entertaining and full of different props and costume changes and stuff like that. So. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's definitely special. It's just too special for me.
It is very impressive that he's been doing this relevant for as many decades as he has. I mean, that alone is pretty rare in music. So.
Yeah. So when you talk about parody music, Weird Al is generally the first name that comes up. So check out Weird Al Yankovic in 3D.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
Yeah, it's time again for Deep Questions by Don. All right, so, well, as I said, you know, I used to really be into Weird Al when I was a kid, and, you know, these days I don't like it quite as much. What did you used to think was funny, but not so much anymore?
Yeah, it's like an interesting question, Don. I was in high school, one of the more popular things for boys my age were these, like, prank phone call albums that were coming out. Like, primarily the Jerky Boys was, like...
Yeah.
Everything in my high school for some reason. I guess I thought it was funny then. I don't really find the prank stuff very funny at all nowadays. And I feel like there's a lot of like really toxic pranking online going on, especially on like YouTube and TikTok and stuff.
And fake pranking too. Sometimes it's so clearly staged and the reactions are so phony, but people still buy into it. And then they try to recreate those with their family and friends and people get hurt.
people get like seriously injured or like, really do terrible things to each other. Yeah, that's not that great.
Prank culture.
Prank culture. See ya. What about you, dude?
Ugh. So just one silly thing from probably around the same time that I thought Weird Al was fun to listen to, the Garbage Pail Kids.
Oh, yeah. Like trading cards?
Yeah, the trading cards. I thought those were hilarious, like Snotty Lottie and just a girl covered in mucus.
Dana Druff or Dana Druff or something.
Yeah, so I mean, it was basically, for those that haven't seen it, it was a trading card series, and it was these cartoon characters that looked a lot like Cabbage Patch Kids, but gross stuff was happening to them. And then they had gross names and stuff. Yeah, I thought that was hilarious.
They were like the Weird Al of Cabbage Patch Kids.
Yes, exactly.
Well, and they were kind of a spinoff of, I think they were called Wacky Packs or something.
Yeah. But a piece of dry gum came in the pack of cards. And
nice.
So, yeah, I thought those were hilarious. And I used to draw my own as well. Yeah.
Wow.
I was quite into it for a couple of months, probably. And, you know, as kids do, you move on pretty quickly. But
I had a school folder for, I think, Blasted Billy or Atom Bomb.
You ever see the live action movie?
No.
What?
Wow.
Atrocious. The puppets are so disgusting looking that it's like a horror film almost.
I'm kind of curious.
Yeah, it's like, I think they're aliens or something.
They try to give them a backstory?
Yeah. How about you, Don?
Well, you know, I know like humor changes over time and through decades, and I can usually go back to things from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and even if I don't find it laugh out loud funny, I can sort of appreciate why it was funny at the time, appreciate the context. But I watched one of the Police Academy movies recently.
Oh, yeah?
It did not hold up well, but the biggest problem was that Bobcat Goldthwait or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I remember thinking he was funny when I did was too. 12 or 11 or whatever, but like I don't get the character.
like a drunk Yoda.
Yeah. He kind of ruins that movie Scrooged with Bill Murray, which is otherwise like a pretty good movie, but he's like the weakest part of that. I have heard that he's gone on to like he doesn't do that character anymore and, you know, does funny things, but
so a lot of those 80s comedies in particular, and I don't know about the Police Academy per se, but there were a lot of those that you go back and watch, like Porky's and that kind of stuff that Porky's, are just like the behavior of the kids in that is deplorable. It's not funny at all, but a different time, you know?
Different times, yeah.
All right. Well, what do you think is not so funny anymore? Let us know. Hit us on Instagram and Facebook or leave a comment on our website, albumnerds.com.
So my pick for a funny album is This Is Spinal Tap, the soundtrack to the movie of the same name. And the fake band is Spinal Tap. They're a fictional English heavy metal band. It was created by American comedians and musicians Michael McKean, Christopher Guest, and Harry Shearer. And they portray these band members, David St. Hubbins, Nigel Tufnel, and Derek Smalls. It debuted in 1979 as a sketch on an ABC comedy TV show and rose to fame with the mockumentary, This Is Spinal Tap. All right, so why don't we kick it off with Big Bottom.
Cakes. Oh my God.
So this was released in 1984, and it's really a mock rock documentary about the absurdities of the rock world and the lines that rock bands would push in that era with innuendo and stuff, and they take it one step further.
She was a fast machine. She kept her motor clean.
Yes. But the soundtrack was co-written by Rob Reiner, who's the director of the film, and then the three members of the band and cast. And they played their own instruments, and they wrote these songs. It sounds so close to what could have actually been happening in metal music at the time, especially when you consider this would have been more of a greatest hits. There's a fake discography of like 10 albums that these songs are from. These songs are featured in their live performances in the film. My clickbait headline to describe the album: This Is Spinal Tap, because what's rock without big balls, bigger bottoms, and a complete lack of self-awareness? it almost becomes what it poked fun at. Like I said, it's so close to that line of sounding genuine. This Big Bottom in particular reminds me of Big Balls by AC/DC from 1976, where it's about cotillions and rich people's balls, but it's also about testicles. The fact that that existed for real is mind-boggling, but the music's kind of all over the place. They do hard rock, glam metal, jazz fusion, little reggae, and it even sounds progressive rock at times. So it started as a joke, and they actually built a loyal fan base of people who love the music. So who'd have thunk? All right, why don't we get into the next song? This one's a little more serious. It's called Sex Farm.
Unbelievable.
I love that in the movie, Derek Smalls is like talking about how their songwriting has gotten more mature. And he's like, look at Sex Farm, for instance.
Yeah, where it's just about the human sexuality. But
yeah. Yeah, Sex Farm there doesn't really have any profanity in it, but somehow it is so incredibly vulgar and over the top. It is every time it just kind of stops me in my tracks listening to this album. But they sell it. They 100% do sell it. I don't know how they walk that line, that thin line.
Well, I think it's that rock artist ego that we know that they're tapping into, that where these people think they're creating these incredibly deep things, right, and that they're artists and musicians, but really it's just cashing in on dirty stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, everything I touch is gold in this movie. And I mean, to some degree, I guess that is kind of gold. Comedy gold.
Hey-o.
I think as an album, this holds up fairly well. I think a lot of it is owed to that sort of variety of styles that they cover. Is kind of like a best greatest hits sort of thing from their career. There's a handful of songs, Sex Farm among them, that I think maybe go a little too far over the line of kind of giving up the illusion that this could be a real band. Big right. Bottom is the other one. Stonehenge, I think, is just so silly. It's so silly.
Well, that one's supposed to be tapping more into the like Iron Maiden-y sort of myths and mystical.
Yeah. And you could kind of buy that, but then the details, it's too silly for me. But there are a handful of songs on here that I think do work pretty well. You know, for like fans of like Kiss or similar bands, I think this would be kind of right up your alley. My clickbait headline for this is Spinal Tap is Rob Reiner and crew take the mockumentary genre up to 11.
Couldn't they just make 10 the highest?
No, see, this goes beyond that. Specially made.
But this goes to 11.
I mean, they really do. They really perfected the formula for what a mockumentary should be. And I think this is kind of the blueprint for sure.
The songs support it really well. I believe that these songs are funny on their own, but really watching the movie or being familiar with it and seeing them in the context of their travels on this ill-fated tour makes them feel more real. And I think that, you know, I believe the movie is necessary for this to have its full impact.
I think you're right, man. For Stonehenge, I picture those little tiny rocks coming down out of the out of the rafters and the little people dancing around it. It's just, I mean, it's so hysterical.
Apparently, that prop debacle from the film was inspired by a real-life mistake during Black Sabbath's 1983 tour, but only in reverse. They had an oversized set that wouldn't fit on the stage.
Oh, for real?
And so I know Spinal Tap had an undersized set that was ridiculous.
Yeah, that's even funnier.
All right, well, why don't we get into one of the songs that harkens back to the earlier days of the Tap. Listen to the Flower People.
What the flower people say. Listen, it's getting louder every day.
Yeah, so in the fictional world of This Is Spinal Tap, this was supposedly released in 1967 during the Summer of Love. I'm not sure if it's not clear whether they're Spinal Tap at that point or if they're still the Thamesmen.
I think they are the Tap by this point, and Derek Smalls had joined the band by this point.
Oh, okay.
Thank you for clarifying those important historical details.
No, there's a website that has the entire Spinal Tap like timeline, when they were fake born, when they fake got together, all of it. So
So the song supposedly represents their attempt to capitalize on the popular counterculture movement at the time. So it's, you know, it's clearly a parody of like kind of psychedelic rock and that flower power movement of the late 1960s. I kind of like it because it's realistic. You know, I mean, you have a lot of those metal bands in the 70s and 80s or rock bands. They, you know, they came from different places and they were, you know, making goofy music in the 1960s,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, totally.
So my clickbait headline is, "This is Spinal Tap, works on screen as well as your boombox." You know, I agree that, you know, the songs make more sense sort of in the context of the film, but it still works. Like, I actually enjoyed this week listening to these songs, and you do catch a lot more of the lyrics that, you know, you might not notice when you're, you know, watching the film.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it really just is a testament to, you know, how great a film it is. Musicians, you know, bands, they all love it, you know, so they really I think sort of captured that, I don't know, I guess what life on the road can be like for bands, even if they're satirizing it.
Yeah. I mean, there's some other songs on here like Heavy Duty. It's about exaggerating strength and power. Heavy duty. Heavy duty, rock and roll.
Drop a duty on your soul.
Yeah, but duty being D-U-T-Y, like the work that your soul has to do to support this music. It's not about poo-poo.
Right.
But yeah, rock and roll creation, I think, is funny. Give Me Some Money is when they were still the Thamesmen, so that's more of a Beatle-y kind of thing. So yeah, they fill in the history of it so convincingly that when I was a kid, I thought they were real until I grew up enough to see the movie and go, oh, those are actors that I recognize. This album really does blend satire and rock music. And it turns those absurdities of fame and excess into an unforgettable, funny album experience. So these songs have been stuck in my head. So why don't you go check out This is Spinal Tap.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Well, we've been yucking it up all week. Did you get down to any serious music? What are you guys digging?
I got a couple of picks here in my comedic prop trunk. First one for me is from hip-hop artist from Brooklyn, New York. This is actually kind of a sad story here. The artist's name is Ka. Put out an album back in October called The Thief Next to Jesus. Unfortunately, he passed away in mid-October at the age of 52. So this is his last known recorded material. Let's play the opening cut, Bread, Wine, Body, Blood.
Don't be the weapon they use to harm you.
I actually did listen to this at some point.
Okay. I've really enjoyed it a lot. It's got a lot of gospel samples, a lot of religious imagery. I think it's a pretty strong call to action in the album.
Is it all drawn out, like his lyrics like that? Are they slow?
And very slow, poetic delivery.
I kind of like it.
Yeah, I like him a lot. He's kind of underrated. Credit to The Needle Drop. He's a big proponent of him. But yeah, sad that he passed away. The other one for me is from Father John Misty, who we talked about on the show, I think, earlier this year at one point. He has a new record out called Mahash Mashana, I believe is how you would say it. It's a 6-studio album. Let's play I Guess Time Just Makes Fools of Us All.
I guess time just
So you went with a hip-hop album with religious overtones, and then you go to a guy with a name with religious overtones. Father John Misty.
Yeah, weirdly, that's the funnier record, is the Father John one. Less smirk in this, though, than I would say some of his previous work. A lot more melody. He's actually singing pretty well, and there's a couple of catchy moments on here. I was surprised.
That was kind of disco-y, that rhythm.
Yeah, he really expands his sonic palette here. Father John Misty, pretty good stuff. What you been digging on, Don?
Well, it's been out for a couple of years, but I finally got to it. There's a documentary about Syd Barrett called Have You Got It Yet? The Story of Syd Barrett and Pink Floyd. So as, you know, most of you know, Syd Barrett was the original, you know, front man of Pink Floyd. So the film was directed by Roddy Bagawa and Storm Thurgerson from Hypnosis. Those are the guys that were responsible for a lot of the album covers of Pink Floyd and others. But, you know, Syd Barrett is a tragic story, basically. You know, this guy that was, you know, really innovative in the psychedelic world, he, you know, sort of succumbed to mental illness. But anyway, definitely a good film to check out. And then also a band called Matt Pond PA. Have you guys ever heard of Matt Pond PA?
Sounds familiar, yeah.
Is that a town in Pennsylvania?
I still don't understand the title of the band, but it does have a guy named Matt Pond in it, singer-songwriter. But they're from Philadelphia, so I guess that's the PA part of it. They have a new album coming out, The Ballad of the Natural Lines, which is due out in February. Here's the title track, The Ballad of the Natural Lines.
I mean, I know I didn't hear much of it, but it reminds me a little bit of Crackers, something like that, that era.
Mm, yeah.
Cool. Got a couple of albums bookmarked here coming out this year from you, Don. Exciting.
All right. Well, what about you, dude?
I went back to the 2024 well. This album that I'm about to talk about was number 10 on my list for the year. It's Opeth with The Last Will and Testament. Came out towards the end of the year. Didn't get a chance to talk about it on the show, so why don't we kick off with a little bit of One.
Is that what it says?
The little symbol next to the one means paragraph, I guess. So paragraph one, but all the songs are just numbers except for the last one.
It's supposed to be Opus with a lisp.
So The Last Will and Testament is the 14th studio album by Swedish progressive metal band Opus. And it's a return to their death metal roots with the growled vocals for the first time since 2008.
It's been resting up those vocal cords for a long time.
But it's an intricate concept set in post-World War I, unraveling dark family secrets through this testament-style narrative of reading of this will, and some secrets about the family come out. So it's a lot, you know, it's a bit of a slog at first, but the concept helps carry you through. And once you get through a couple listens, I thought it was a really great album. But my first listen, I was like, I don't know. So go check that out if you have a few hours. And the next one up, I finally did pick up on vinyl just a few weeks ago. This is number 2 on my list for favorite albums of the year. And we did talk about it at the midpoint of the year when we were doing a new release show. It's The Black Crowes, Happiness Bastards. Here's a little bit of Wanting and Waiting. So this was their first new material since 2009's Before the Frost Until the Freeze. It sounds like the Black Crowes, like classic.
It does.
Exactly what you want, and they nail it. They sound better than they have in a long time, and I love it. I think it's a great record, among their best, in my opinion, in their discography. So go check that one out. And the vinyl I have is just the plain black, but there's some cool album art. Like when you open the record, where you put the record sleeve in, there's actually some printed artwork inside that too. So they have a few little secrets in the packaging.
Nice.
All right. So what are you digging? Let us know. Join us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky. Also on our website, albumnerds.com.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Well, it's about that time on the show, and I'm reminded of the great American comic and actor Steve Martin, who said, "Talking about music is like dancing about architecture." Very true, Steve. Very true. With that in mind, let's bring out my friend and yours, Wadbot, and see what we'll be talking about on next week's episode.
Get ready to dive into the world of controversial albums. Next time, you will be exploring three records that sparked debates, pushed boundaries, and shook the music world, proving that art isn't always about playing it safe.
Controversial albums. That should be interesting. Potentially dangerous. Can I just do Prince's Controversy? I'm not sure how controversial it was, but it's got the name.
Yeah. Time to get scandalous, guys.
What's your favorite controversial album? What else are you listening to? Email us at podcast@albumnerds.com. Also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky at Album Nerds. And visit albumnerds.com to suggest topics for the show, peruse the Hall of Fame, and listen to all 274 episodes. And the best way to support the show is to share it. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
Thank you once again for joining us on the Album Nerds podcast. We'll go from funny to deadly serious on the next episode when we talk about controversial albums.
Awesome. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next week.
Try the rye or the Kaiser or the wheat or the white.
More.
Maybe I can suggest an appetizer.
Can you at least do Living with a Hernia?
I mean, I don't remember the word.
Living with a hernia.
That's the one.
Gonna have an operation.
Okay, okay.
Boy, oh boy.
So silly.